From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com.
Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week, my guest is Oliver Sabin, better known as Unicorn Kid. This Scots pop take on the chiptune movement garnered the attention of Gorillaz frontman Damon Albarn and got him an opening gig on a big Pet Shop Boys tour. Now his single Dreamcatcher is making waves on indie and electronic charts in the UK and the US. Let's get to the interview.
I like to figure out where you're coming from musically, and you're still a young guy yourself, so I'm wondering, are you a classically trained musician?
No, I mean, I'm not. I first started playing instruments, which was, I guess, like keyboard lessons when I was six, and, you know, I was never actually very good at it, and I did it for, like, I guess 4 years, and I kind of, like, picked up different guitars and stuff like that and got into that and kind of played that up until, I guess, I was about 15. And then I started getting, like, gradually more interested in electronic music. I kind of came into it a weird way because the first time that I had ever kind of, like, dealt with, like, kind of, like, computer music, I guess, was I had this little Casio keyboard called a Casio VL1, which was, like, a very, very basic toy keyboard that, like, kind of, like, halved as a calculator. And I was just, like, layering the drums from that and, like, making little melodies and, like, bass and stuff. And it wasn't good music at all. And I was just kind of putting it online. And then that kind of introduced me to a very basic form of electronic music. And I kind of started moving on to kind of, like, production a bit more seriously on the computer. And it kind of just grew from there. But no, I mean, I'd never been classically trained or anything like that. My knowledge of music isn't good at all. You know, I don't, my music theory knowledge isn't good. So it's all kind of, I guess, just kind of comes from the heart wire, right?
Okay, perfect. Now, you said you were coming into electronic music maybe when you were 15 or so. What were you listening to before that? What was inspiring you, or what was the music that you were into before you sort of got into electronic music?
Throughout my kind of whole kind of childhood and even like early teenagehood, like electronic music had always been, I guess I always kind of considered it a guilty pleasure as such, just mm-hmm. because I don't know, just the kind of people I was hanging around with, it was kind of frowned upon, I suppose. And yeah, so like I was listening to like a lot of metal and a lot of punk and stuff like that. And that was kind of just what I was into as a kid. And then, I don't know, just when I think my first kind of experience with electronic music when I was like, hey, this is okay to like, was just Daft Punk when I was a kid, just listening to that. And I guess like just because of the kind of music that I make, there's still like that kind of echoes of like kind of punk music and the kind of energy that's in it. It certainly probably comes from that because, I mean, I never had a vast knowledge of electronic music until I actually started making it and researching it and stuff.
Why did you choose this very lo-fi 8-bit sound to express yourself musically? Perhaps you should maybe explain chiptune or this sort of lo-fi sound to those who may be unfamiliar.
Sure. I mean, my, I guess, place within the chiptune scene, well, I guess just to explain, chiptune is a word that kind of refers to music that's traditionally made with video games consoles like Commodore 64s or Game Boys or Nintendos or whatever. And there's a whole kind of scene surrounding that. And it goes off in a lot of different directions, like the demo scene, which has got like a lot of history behind it, you know, to like kind of modern day teenagers who are picking up Game Boys and hacked software cartridges and writing from there. And I guess my place in it's kind of weird because the kind of music that I make is I guess a lot more commercial than a lot of the stuff that's coming out of there. Mm-hmm. I'm using a lot of modern day synths. I'm sampling from different places that they are, and I guess it's a lot less pure than what a lot of the Egyptian musicians are doing. So yeah, I mean, I don't really know what got me into that sound. I guess I've always been kind of fascinated with the whole kind of like early video game aesthetic, both kind of like visually and with the kind of music that was in the games when I used to play my Sega when I was like a little kid. Mm-hmm. So I always just thought it sounded like really, really cool, I guess. So yeah, and then I just And then, you know, I'm the more and more I researched like the different consoles and the different sounds that the sound chips made, you know, I wanted to mess around with that. And I think there's a lot of depth people don't realize there is in the sounds that these consoles can make.
Who were some of your biggest influences in the genre, or did you sort of approach it from a wholly original place? Did you sort of go back and look at some of these other artists who were, you know, in the chiptune scene, or did you just come in with an idea like, oh, I'm going to make my own music with these game consoles and sort of add my own aesthetic?
I mean, right at the start, I guess I would have been, I think I was 15 when I first started messing around with Unicorn Kid stuff. There was a guy from Glasgow who's called Saberpulse who had been doing it for a good few years, and, you know, he made Game Boy music, and I'd seen him live a couple of times, and, you know, I was like a big fan just because it was so new sounding to me. And so I guess that was kind of my first introduction to chiptune as a genre, but there wasn't, I guess, wasn't so much the reason that I got into it. I kind of did just come from a different direction than I guess a lot of people did, because, you know, I was just messing around with toy keyboards and I was like, hey, this sounds kind of lo-fi, and I'm messing around with just like kind of like modern day VSTs and synths and stuff and coming up with kind of sounds that sounded close to that kind of lo-fi sound, but I guess I wanted to get closer to something a bit more authentic, I suppose.
Bites from Unicorn Kid's Lion Hat EP right here on the UNS podcast. You're based in Edinburgh, and you had talked about seeing Saberpulse in Glasgow. What is the electronic music scene like in Scotland?
You know, there's a lot of really cool stuff coming out of the UK in general, but I mean, Scotland in particular has a lot of forward-thinking producers, but mostly based in Glasgow, I guess, coming out with, obviously, I don't want to pigeonhole or whatever, but I guess it's like kind of like post-dubstep, hip-hoppy tracks, and, you know, it's really amazing stuff. People like, I guess, like Rusty and Hudson Mohawk, and kind of centered around this label called Lucky Me. And so, yeah, you know, Scotland has a lot of amazing stuff coming out of it right now. Although I wouldn't say that, you know, I'm really involved or related to that whole scene, just because I guess there's not a lot of people around doing a similar thing, which is kind of difficult, I guess, not being closely involved in any scene or group, I suppose.
I see what you're saying, and of course dubstep moved from the UK into the United States and has been really informing a major slice of the electronic music pie in the United States now. Sure. A lot of people are experimenting with dubstep or have worked with it and moved on, but it certainly has been around in the UK for a while and bubbling and evolving and having a life of its own. And you decided to meld both the lo-fi sound that you were working with and the sort of dubstep of the time. Tell me, what was your process behind that?
Sure. I mean, I guess like Dreamcatcher varies from a lot of the other stuff that I've done, just because, I mean, it was actually a track that I'd written 2 years prior to releasing Dreamcatcher called Triangle Drop, which was when I was, I guess, first kind of discovering dubstep. And I'd heard a track by a guy called Quarta 330, I think you pronounce it, and he's on Hyperdub, and he had this track called Sunset Dub, which was this really simple, I think, Game Boy composed traditional like kind of dub track. And, you know, I thought it was amazing, and I kind of just went from there and wrote this really basic demo under a different name, not as Unicorn Kid. And when I signed to Ministry of Sound, you know, I was just playing them some stuff, and it was on my iPod, and I played them, and they really liked it. So, you know, I went back and redid it with kind of fresh ears, and you know, kind of came out with that. And there are a lot of people kind of within dubstep and related genres messing around with 8-bit sounds now. So I guess now the kind of market for that sort of thing is a bit more saturated than it was when I first wrote it.
When you first released the Lion Hat EP, you must have been 15, 16 years old. How did that even come about? How were you able to first of all, catch the ear of a producer or a label, and then, you know, be able to produce something? Yet I imagine you had sort of other things going on at your age.
Yeah, I mean, I was 16, yeah, and I'd been just kind of like making a few tracks and putting them up in MySpace and just promoting myself and doing it in between school and stuff. And I met a woman who's now my manager called Jen, and she was just setting up a label and just starting to manage bands at the time. And she picked it up and we decided to do an EP, and I already had this track Lionheart written, and you know, I wrote a couple B-sides for it, and we just put it out on her label, and we got like 1,000 copies done and just kind of put it on iTunes and stuff. And yeah, it got picked up by some UK radio people. Like, I don't, you probably won't know him, but I get, Hugh Stevens, who does Radio 1 in the UK, picked it up and played it a lot, actually, which was cool. And it kind of was like a launch pad for people to kind of hear about me. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was just lucky to have that EP picked up and released. I mean, it was really, really early on, and I guess it did happen maybe a little too early to have that kind of thing coming out just at that time, because, you know, I didn't really have any direction or any kind of idea of what I wanted to do. I was just making music and putting it out. So there was no real kind of like thought behind it at the time. Yeah, it's a lot different to the kind of stuff that I'm doing now. I mean, if you're kind of listening to the sounds that I was using then, but you know, it's cool. It's I guess kind of like early stages, I suppose.
And now you're with Ultra Records, an enormous label in the world of electronic music. How does that change what you can do, or does it just mean that you have access to a wider audience, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Ultra, obviously, I mean, if you look at their roster, haven't done a lot like me. And, you know, I was a little wary just before signing to them, because obviously I didn't know how they would know like how to treat it, or you know, whether it would restrict the kind of thing that I could do. But mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they're a really, really great label, and you know, they got a really diverse roster, and you know, I don't really see being with them as like it's gonna hinder the kind of thing that I can do. You know, I'm just gonna keep writing the kind of thing that I want to write, and you know, I think it's a good relationship. And you know, I'm obviously excited because it opens me up to like a much, much bigger audience. You know, Ultra are my US label and Ministry of Sound are the UK label. So for Ultra to be kind of dedicated to releasing stuff in the US, it's cool because it opens up doors to, you know, an audience that I would have no way to know how to reach.
Dreamcatcher, the new single from Unicorn Kid. Your track Dreamcatcher is blowing up both the UK and here in the States. Can you walk me through your process in the creation of a track like that? I wonder if there's a special formula for you, because you are using, while it's at its heart still electronic music, you're using different gear and different programs maybe to put this together. I wonder if there's a sort of unique way in which you create your own tracks.
Sure. I mean, I guess I've got like in my arsenal a whole bunch of samples of kind of that I've collected from like various consoles, and obviously I've got virtual instruments that can kind of generate the kind of authentic sound from the sound chips. What I'll generally do when I start off is just start with drums, or like, well, even if I was just sitting down and I got like a little melody idea, I'll either start with that or a kind of drum pattern that I've thought of. And you know, I still don't really know how to write a song. Like I get so stuck when like I need to start something new, purely because, you know, I don't really know the process to go about writing a song. I guess you always just need that kind of like little melodic nugget, or that thing that's just like, I guess, a hook, just something that you really like and that you can kind of build a song around. So that'll be either like a bass line working with a melody nicely, or just like a really sweet drum loop that you've made, or even just a sample that sounds so unique and new that you just kind of know what direction to go down. So there's nothing in particular that I start with, but I just need that idea to base the song around, because obviously I guess I need a theme in my head to write something.
Sure. And you were asked by the Gorillaz to remix Superfast Jellyfish, which in my opinion is a phenomenal track. How did that relationship get formed?
Well, I guess because obviously when I was being approached by like labels and stuff like that, word kind of gets around, I suppose. And
sure.
I was kind of like, I guess labels like to build up kind of arsenals of remixes that they want to use. So I think I'd done some stuff with Parlophone before, and that's the Gorillaz label. And, you know, they just contacted asking for a remix. You know, I jumped on it because obviously I've loved Gorillaz since I was a kid, and, you know, I'm a really big fan of their new stuff. So yeah, and I got the track, and I spent about, I think I spent like 2 weeks on it because I was so, I didn't know where to go with it. And then I spent so long trying to find that bit to kind of like write the song around. But, you know, I got it in the end, and apparently Damon Albarn really liked it. So that's good news.
That's fantastic. Your music is absolutely electronic at its heart, but your collaborations and your appearances at festivals like South by Southwest have made you sort of an indie darling, if you don't mind being called that.
That's cool.
Where do you feel most comfortable, both as an artist and as a performer? Which is your world, do you feel?
I mean, it's weird because, I mean, I think a lot of people have a difficulty getting their head around, you know, what I am, because, I mean, I'm not a DJ, and, you know, I actually don't know how to DJ. I'm trying to learn at the moment just because I would like to. And just because of the kind of pace of the music that I make, it's not really something that I can incorporate my set into being like a DJ set. So I don't really play in club environments. It's more so, like, I play gigs, and I guess I play live. I would consider myself like a kind of one-man electronic band, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. more so than like a DJ, like I guess like just an electronic act, I guess. And more often than not, I play in between bands than DJs. And yeah, it's a difficult thing to kind of get your head around. And, you know, I'm not even really sure of my place within kind of like the electronic music scene, because I never really thought about that whilst I was making this, kind of the place that I'm at now. So I guess I consider myself a kind of like a solo artist as opposed to like a DJ producer.
That works. That works for me. Now, the Dreamcatcher video is wildly imaginative. Did you have any input with the video, or was it, you know, your label saying, hey, go out and shoot this, and then we'll take care of the package?
I found this guy online who'd done videos for, well, he was just like making videos to songs that he liked, like not official videos. So he did stuff for like Flying Lotus and Washed Out and stuff like that. And then he, so I contacted him asking if he would want to do a video for me. And he was like, you know, sure, totally. But obviously I had to feature in the video a little bit, and I kind of had an idea about the kind of thing that I wanted to do. So I went down the beach with my friend, and I just filmed stuff on my camera and sent it over to him, and he kind of like transformed it into this like crazy multi-layered kaleidoscope video. And, you know, I was really happy with it. And the guy himself is like 17 years old, I think, he did the video. So it was kind of cool to be working with somebody around about my own age as well.
What's the next big project for you? What are you working on? Are you trying to put together some more live appearances, or are you thinking about going back into the studio and churning out a full length? What's on your agenda?
Yeah, I mean, for the rest of the year, I'm going to be at home just doing the album now. I finished my first single, which will be out both UK and US. And it's all vocal collaborations, the new singles. The album's going to be split about 50-50, instrumental vocals. So it's been pretty new working with vocalists. But yeah, it's been cool. I mean, I just, obviously with like my label and publishing behind me and stuff, it's been a lot better because I've been able to get in contact with people that I would have been able to get before to sing on tracks. And basically, like, I've been approaching a lot of singers to kind of collaborate with on the tracks, and I'm in the middle of that. I don't think I can actually, like, I don't think I'm allowed to say who's working on the tracks yet, because we haven't like wrapped them up completely yet. So sure. I mean, you never know what's gonna work and what's not gonna work out in the end. I don't know how well known they are in the States, but my first single is with Nick Littlemore, who was in Empire of the Sun and an Australian dance act called Pinyao. So he's singing on the new track, and yeah, you know, it's been cool. It's a lot more pop than my old stuff, but you know, I like pop music, so
there you go. Oliver Sabin, thank you so much for being on the Unz podcast.
No problem, it's been cool.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's Unz podcast. Thanks go to Debbie Pressman with Girly Action Media, and of course my guest Oliver Sabin. Stay tuned to theunz.com for news about the forthcoming Unicorn Kid album. Congratulations to Joe Sadowski and Disco Nutter and Rocka for finishing at the top of the Wild Wild Womp bracket in the Unz Challenge. They'll join Arpetrio, Fast Nasty, Dirty Ganesh, Noisecraft, The Flying Skulls, and Electronic Anonymous in the final round of the challenge. Voting opens up in 1 week at theunz.com/theunzchallenge. Next week on the Unz podcast, mega producer Laserbeak of the Doomtree crew will be featured on the program. His latest album, Legend Recognized Legend, is out now.
Remember to visit theunce.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on The Unce Podcast, contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunce.com. Catch you next week.